Live, it's E-Trade AM, your source for smart investing.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to E-Trade AM. I'm Mike Schneider, along with Stephanie Elam. Good morning, Steph.
Good morning, Mike. We're going to take a look at a few things today, but let's start off with our futures, see what we're doing as we're heading into the market open about an hour away right now. Dow futures are down 6. NASDAQ futures are also down 6. And the S&P futures are down 1.5. So with futures heading downward, we may be in for a softer market. That's what some investors are looking for.
Soft is such a comforting word, but I don't know that many people will be comforted by what they have
soft,
to hear today.
Soft, down, pillows, no.
You won't be going to sleep in the next hour, we'll guarantee you that. Coming up in the next half hour, for instance, on E-Trade AM, we're going to focus on the energy markets. And if that doesn't deprive you of some sleep, I don't know what will. Crude oil futures trading above $35 a barrel right now. Natural gas remaining at all-time high. It's above $5. We want to spend more than a little bit of time talking about the energy markets and the impacts on the rest of the markets and the economy, and there's no doubt about that. I mean, you cannot have something like this go on without virtually everything else feeling something.
Definitely. And so in light of that, we're going to see what some companies are doing to cut back on some of those costs. We're going to talk to Chief Executive Officer of Electric City, and they are a leader in energy conservation technology. See what they can tell us and how they're helping out.
Conservation seems to be a good word for the
day.
Very
good word.
Well.
Key word for the day.
In the second half hour, going to take off the gloves for the investor grudge match. No bloodshed, we can guarantee you of that, but some verbal battles will be waged.
Feistiness.
Indeed. But first, we're going to check in on the morning's top business headlines. It is time for a market flash with WebFN's Tom Hudson.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Stephanie. The Dow closed down 19 points yesterday, ending at 10,789. NASDAQ, though, it had its best percentage gain in a day since June yesterday. A lot of high-tech winners yesterday, up more than 3.5% on the NASDAQ to 3,866. S&P adding 15 points to 1,460. So that's where we begin the day here in the States. Overseas trading right now, the FTSE is down 100 in the UK, the DAX in Germany down 98, and the CAC in Paris down 110. In Asia, the Nikkei jumped up 2% to close at 16,458 in Tokyo. Now, some new trade deficit numbers just out for the U.S. Let's take a look at those. The U.S. goods and services trade deficit widened to a record $31.9 billion in July. Crude oil imports soared to their highest level ever. This is what fueled this. The July figure is $1 billion above expectations. Imports up 0.6%, hitting another record high. Exports falling 1.5% thanks to decreased foreign demand for U.S. autos and capital goods. Now, the trade deficits with Japan and with China also swelled to records. We've been talking with the chief executive of Chase Manhattan Bank. He's telling us that about 3,200 positions will be cut when the third largest U.S. bank begins that process of digesting the acquisition of securities giant J.P. Morgan & Company. The Chase Manhattan has yet to identify where these positions will be cut or when these folks are going to lose their jobs. Now, the Chase CEO says earlier reports of cutting 10,000 jobs simply are not true. They're going to cut about 3,200 jobs instead. Some earnings reports this morning before the bell. Lehman Brothers says its third quarter was the second strongest ever in terms of revenue and earnings per share. Lehman Brothers blew away expectations by 62 cents. $3.37 a share is where the earnings came in. Net revenues up 51% from a year ago quarter. Boeing expects to generate more free cash in the year 2000 than it previously forecast. Now, guys, the company says its free cash flow should be above $4 billion for this year. The company says its cash position continues to improve, and it expects to complete a 15% share buyback by the end of the year. It announced that buyback several months ago. The U.S. Senate okayed normal permanent trade relations with China yesterday. The next stop, the Oval Office. President Clinton is expected to put his signature on this. An OPEC official says the group is ready to produce an extra 500,000 barrels per day of oil if prices remain high after the agreed 800,000 barrel per day increase takes place coming up here on October 1st. The Secretary General telling us this morning that OPEC's price band mechanism to try to stabilize oil prices in that 22 to 28 per barrel range was flexible, but he wouldn't commit himself to the timing of any further oil production increase. Guys, that's the news for now. Back to E-Trade AM with Mike Schneider and Stephanie Elam.
What do you guys drive? Small cars or what?
I got really one of those tiny cars, you know, that takes about an eyedropper full of gas every couple of weeks.
Oh, so you're not too disturbed.
I'm not too disturbed. No, but it does affect me, though. It used to take me $10 to fill up the tank. Now it's up to 2022.
Yeah. Stephanie, what about you? You have a car.
I drive Nikes.
Really? Yeah. Because you're a city person, right?
So, yeah. City people, I don't really drive a car often. I hear the drivers complaining every now and then.
Right.
I don't really engage.
I have a truck. I have a truck.
Oh, you've been hit hard.
Oh,
then.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
About a year ago, it cost me about $35 to fill up the gas tank on my truck.
Those SUVs.
Yeah, that's
what it is.
People
are going to start trading them in and go down to nice, smaller cars.
Well, no. We're going to start blockading the highways like the Parisian truck drivers did. But it did not cost me more than $65. And the price of crude oil keeps on climbing. It closed at $35.72 yesterday. Tom mentioned that the U.S. July trade deficit numbers, the record crude oil imports helped to fuel the goods and services trade deficit. We're talking about record territory there. Well, Peter Rosenthal is the senior energy correspondent at Bridge News. He joins us right now to talk about all that. Good morning, Peter.
Morning.
Give me a sense, first of all, of what we're talking about here. Should we be worried about gas lines, a repeat of the early 1970s?
On the gasoline side, I don't think we're looking at a shortage just yet. People are focusing right now on heating oil and other types of what's called distillate fuel before the winter. And those supplies on the East Coast, where most of that is consumed, are half of what they were a year ago. And that's what's got President Clinton and lawmakers and traders scratching their heads as to how to solve this problem and how to make sure that people in the Northeast don't freeze this winter.
Before we move along, what are distillate fuels?
Basically, when you refine a barrel of crude oil, you get all sorts of different things, and one of them is called a middle distillate. That includes both diesel fuel, which you'll see on trucks and buses and everything else, and heating oil, which is just another way to make that stuff.
And the truckers have been getting killed throughout this situation.
Same exact reason, mainly because the representative contract on the New York Mercantile Exchange, where crude oil is also traded, is where heating oil is traded, and they hedge by using that contract, and that contract has been at 10-year highs as well as crude oil.
OPEC's talking about, as Tom had mentioned, the extra half a million barrels per day. Does that mean anything?
No, because I think people see OPEC's promises right now as fairly hollow. They've agreed to raise production from October 1st by 800,000 barrels a day. Until people actually see that oil in the market, they're not even going to think about another half a million barrels a day. And there are people concerned that OPEC is nearing capacity. They're at 92% of their production capacity and climbing.
Well, how did all this happen then? I mean, a year ago, we're talking about when oil was at $10 a barrel or something like that, and suddenly OPEC, we were told, at least the popular notion is that the guys at OPEC decided the prices were too low, so they cut back production. Prices shot up. Now the outsider's viewpoint would be, okay, they got the prices back up. Now they can ramp up production again. But what I seem to be hearing is that even if they ramp up production, prices are not going back down.
Exactly. Well, they can ramp up production all they want. The problem is, where's all this oil going, which has caused somewhat of a riddle here on Wall Street. People trying to figure out, is the oil at sea? Is the oil being soaked up by better-than-expected demand in Asia? Demand, for instance, in the U.S. appears to be somewhat stable from last year, and last year we were looking at prices in the range of anywhere from $19 to $29. But like you mentioned, when oil prices were low, that's led us to where we are now. People cut back investments, both the major oil companies, the little guys, as well as OPEC, and reduce their flexibility so that when prices were high, they couldn't add barrels to the market.
Well, talking about the oil companies, the oil stocks, tell me about them.
Well, they finally seem to have caught up somewhat to oil's robustness in the last couple months. Exxon and Phillips, for instance, hitting some close to, all-time highs, and people, though, are still discounting the fact that we're near or above $35 oil. They're pricing more in the line of $22 to $18 oil. But people are now getting concerned that if oil tops, that oil stocks will start to fall, and maybe a top is in. UBS, for instance, downgraded Exxon today after it neared its price target.
Peter, I was in here thinking about this strategic petroleum reserve. If they do dip into this, do you think it's really going to affect these oil stocks? Is it going to hurt them?
Certainly. Those might be the first place people look to liquidate. It really depends on how much oil Clinton decides to release from the SPR, whether it's a major release of 30 or 60 million barrels or just a test release, as some have speculated, of 5 or 6 million barrels. But I think any amount would certainly push the market lower. This morning we were down as much as a dollar after it was heard that Gore was planning to call for an SPR release. And inside the White House, you're having a bit of a fight with the Treasury and possibly the Office of Management and Budget and other economic advisors warning Clinton not to do it because it would interfere with free market activities, while you've got Gore, who's facing the biggest election of his life, begging Clinton to do something to make sure that gasoline prices aren't back up at $2 a gallon when voters go to the poll.
Okay, and so that's also leading to some of these downgrades that we're seeing here then as well, right?
I think that and the fact that oil companies, like I said, have really caught up to some of the gains people had been expecting and maybe reaching some of the price targets, and therefore they're worried about how much higher can they go, and maybe there's more on the downside ahead.
Peter, what about Mr. Saddam Hussein? You know, we've, after cutting him off for a while now, my understanding is through this, I guess, the transfer of food to Iraq for humanitarian purposes, we've allowed him to sell some oil to raise the funds necessary for that. And Iraq is, as I understand it, has emerged now as the third largest producer of oil again in the region.
That's right. The UN, since 1996, has allowed Iraq to sell oil to pay for food and other humanitarian supplies. And that's putting Iraqi production now at close to 3 million barrels a day. And with Saudi Arabia, the world's largest producer, having less capacity than that, it's made Iraq somewhat of the swing producer. At an interesting time, we've got the election coming up. There are also some issues coming up at the UN. For instance, today or tomorrow, they're going to start discussing whether to resume weapons inspections in that country, which haven't been done since since the Allied forces bombed Iraq in late 1998. And there's also finally an issue about paying Kuwait for damage done during the Gulf War, some $16 billion. And there are people fearful that Iraq could shut off exports to protest such a decision.
And if Iraq should decide to, they've been talking rather harshly about Kuwait again, if Iraq should decide to do something, play some games or something a lot more serious than that, what is the impact likely to be? Could that trigger a true crisis in terms of energy production and supplies?
It's not certain whether it would trigger a crisis because the U.S. does have an SPR, as do other industrialized nations that are members of the International Energy Agency, and there is 571 million barrels there, enough to support maybe 6 months of Iraqi production, but it certainly would send prices sharply higher in the short term.
All right, Peter, going to leave it there for now. Peter Rosenthal, who's the senior energy correspondent for Bridge News. Peter, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Speaking of oil, Eric Olander, his Before the Bell comments. Eric.
It's hard to imagine that the lubricant of the 19th century industrial economy is so tightly linked to the silicon wafer of the 21st century new economy. Like it or not, the steadily rising price of oil could stall the humming engine of the new economy. With the barrel of crude now hovering above $35, there's growing concern here in San Francisco and elsewhere in the Silicon Valley that escalating energy prices will spark a dangerous inflationary trend. And while it's no secret that inflation is never welcome, it could be especially devastating for the emerging tech sector. Many technology firms, especially startups, rely on credit to get their business off the ground. If the cost of borrowing money continues to go up, many startups will have to make a painful choice: pay more in interest rates and debt service fees, or scale back their business plans. And that could stifle innovation. Just as oil greased the industrial engine, money lubricates the budding silicon economy. The government should do everything in its power, including tapping the Strategic Petroleum Reserve if necessary, to lower the cost of oil and avert an inflationary spiral.
Lander, stick around and get your emails in for Buy, Sell, or Hold with ClearStation.com's Chris Skrinak before the opening bell on Wall Street. Stick around for more here on E-Trade AM. And welcome back to E-Trade AM. It's your source for smart investing. I'm Mike Schneider, along with Stephanie Elam. Morning, Steph.
Good morning, Mike.
We should have a pretty interesting remainder of the program here. This energy situation seems to have touched more than a few nerves, I think. Huh?
It's good to get out there and get some more ideas of what we can do, to cut back our costs, looking ahead to this higher energy area.
Well, first we got to get you to have a car so you can have some empathy for the rest of us here.
At any rate, have empathy for me.
No, I'm envying you right now. All right. You know, right now analysts are expecting a flat opening on Wall Street today. Investors are looking for some, for some profit-taking after that tech rally yesterday. Oil prices fell overnight on hopes, and we must emphasize that word, hopes of more OPEC production hikes, giving a possible boost to the blue chips. All right, it's a time to move along to our Ask the CEO segment. It's a regular opportunity to talk with chief executives, their decisions, the companies, their industries. And who better to start off with than John Mottola, who is the chief executive officer of Electric City, and he joins us this morning. He is in Toronto, as I understand it. Mr. Mottola, good to have you with us here on E-Trade AM.
Welcome. Good morning. Thank you.
First of all, tell me a little bit about Electric City. What is the company all about? What do you do?
Well, Electric City is a relatively new company. We are a public company trading on the NASDAQ bulletin board. We're based in the Chicago area. We specialize in energy savings technologies, and those technologies are really designed, and the ones that we develop are designed to take advantage of the new pricing that's being created by the deregulation of the electricity market.
So in a way, the worse things get for people who consume energy, the better for you because it drives people to your company.
Well, in a way, that's true. But we like to think that we're a little bit of ahead of the curve in helping our customers be in a position to manage their energy consumption and demand well before deregulation really creates a form of crisis as it relates to their peak demand electricity pricing.
What is the best example of something that, like an everyday user, most people would be able to use right now?
Well, our technologies in particular are designed for commercial and industrial users. Our signature product is a product called the Energy Saver, which is a lighting control technology. Best example of this that I can give you is we currently have our systems installed at approximately 48 Chicago parks. And the Chicago Park District, from a remote location, operates all of their lighting systems. On a peak day, as energy pricing, hourly energy pricing, increases due to the basic balance of supply and demand, they use our Energy Saver to reduce the energy demand and consumption from their lighting systems on a real-time basis in order to respond to those pricing signals.
How does it work?
Well, the Energy Saver is a voltage controller that we can control either from the specific location or, as I mentioned, from a remote location that reduces the voltage that's going into a commercial or industrial lighting system. That voltage reduction often leads to a slight reduction in lighting.
A brownout?
No, not at all. In fact, commercial industrial lighting systems will allow, just inherent in their own design, reductions in energy that goes into those systems without reducing lighting by very much. Lighting just happens to be a specific area that can be controlled in this way without creating any inconvenience for customers. Our technology allows our customers to do that.
So it's basically like the same amount of voltage coming in, but splitting it through the different lights that would need it.
Yeah, it's almost like an accelerator. And you can imagine that we call this daylight harvesting. If you're driving your car and you're at the top of the hill, you really don't need to apply the accelerator at all. Well, on peak days, very often we find that we're experiencing sunny conditions, and a great deal of natural light is coming into our customer facilities. It's very similar to that car going down the hill. They really don't need to be consuming the same amount of power at those times.
And how is this? Is this a computerized system? Do you have some guy at a control board somewhere who responds to calls in? How does that work?
It's actually completely computerized and automatic. We use a $20 photocell sensor.
$20?
$20 that we install in the customer's space.
So this may be kind of like the thing that I have in my house, sort of.
It could. It could. And that photo sensor is set to provide the customer at all times the lighting levels that they desire. It then sends that signal to the Energy Saver, and the Energy Saver automatically is told, maximize energy savings while maintaining my desired light level.
Is this available for consumer use of people's homes? For instance, do you have this in your house?
No, I do not.
Would you like to?
Yeah, I think I would, but quite honestly, there's a difference between residential lighting and commercial lighting.
So then you're saying that the Chicago parks are using this. Now, how much money is this saving them now by using this technology?
Well, they're currently estimating an annual savings of about $200,000 a year that's growing as they expand their program. It's significant. And, of course, they very much appreciate the environmental benefits. Whenever a customer reduces energy, that has a direct impact on the environment by way of the fossil fuel reduction all the way back to the power plant that's providing that energy.
Tell me about your company's position within your industry. You have a lot of competitors. Is it a very, very competitive industry?
Well, the industry is really just emerging now. I think there's several competitors with different kinds of energy-saving technologies. I think it's safe to say that we are clearly in the lead as it relates to lighting control technologies. But we're seeing new companies develop every day, and we think the market is very large and is going to allow growth for every company, every new company in the sector. This sector is really just developing because of deregulation of the energy industry.
Where do you see your company positioned in 5 years, say?
Well, our three-year target is to grow to annual revenues of $200 million. That would represent a 3 to 5 times growth each year over the next several years. We think that we're in a leading position. We think our brand name is already well-known and recognized. We've already formed several alliances with utility companies, large energy companies throughout North America, which we think positions us ahead of others. We think that we'll be seeing growth through new technology that we're developing and also through acquisitions. We've already completed 2 acquisitions. We'd like to think of ourselves as perhaps the Cisco Systems of the energy savings business.
Well, Mr. Mottola, we will be watching to see if you do present a threat to Cisco in terms of capitalization. Appreciate it. John Mottola, the Chief Executive Officer of Electric City, thanks so much for joining us this morning here on E-Trade AM. Back right now with the Knowledge Center here on E-Trade AM, the energy markets and their impact elsewhere. Phil Flynn joins us right now. Phil is the Vice President and Senior Marketing Analyst at Aileron Trading. Welcome to E-Trade AM, Phil.
Welcome. Hi.
Good morning, Mike and Steph. It's good to be here.
All right, first of all.
How much did he want for your truck?
No, that's it. I'll write it on a piece of paper
there
and slide it across the
okay.
desk. It'll be one of those, you know, secret bids.
Just as long as it doesn't have those Firestone tires, I may be interested.
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
More like the little fat guy who looks like a donut.
Right.
At any rate, we want to, I guess, hit some of the basics right away and find out what's behind all this and find out who's behind all this. OPEC, right. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries?
That's correct.
Who are they?
Well, there are about 12 countries here that everybody remembers from the evil days of the 1970s and when OPEC was our arch enemy and we had a gas crisis and Jimmy Carter was telling us to turn our thermostats down and we were going to become independent on oil. Well, in recent years, OPEC became more of a joke and people didn't take OPEC seriously. But once again, America and the world is taking OPEC seriously.
Crude oil.
Crude oil.
What's so light, sweet crude?
Crude.
Right. What's so light about it? How sweet is it really? And why is it so crude?
Well, actually, somebody actually has to taste that stuff, believe it or not, to find out how it's true. You know, you ever remember those old wildcatting movies and you see them, they strike oil and the first thing they do is they put it in their tongue and say, this is good stuff. But that's basically
really?
What it is. It really is. That's how it picked up its name.
You've got to be kidding me.
There's
a guy out there eating this stuff?
That's right. He's out there and he goes, ooh, good stuff, you know? It's really, that's true. And it actually, the taste quality, you can tell by putting a little bit on your tongue. This could start a new craze across America.
Yes,
you could be an oil tester.
Yeah, well, yes. Let's discuss the pricing of this. Now, you hear that they're $35 a barrel.
Yes.
Are they really still in barrels? And 35, is that high? What would be like the most common low that we would see?
Well, I mean, basically, back in December of 98, we hit the lowest price in crude in many a years. It was about $10.35 a barrel. You remember that. You were paying 98 cents a gallon for gasoline if you had a car, right? It was great. Everybody was loving it. But when you think about it, there's 42 gallons in a barrel, okay? So you're saying $10 a barrel, 42 gallons in a barrel.
That's the amount that it takes to fill my truck.
There you go. Exactly. Actually, I have a couple extra barrels outside that we locked in at $10 a barrel. But anyway, to make a long story short, getting back to the barrel thing. Now think about it. $10 for 42 gallons. Name me one other product you can buy for the same price.
Not milk.
Not milk. Definitely not milk. Yeah. Not even Perrier water.
How about beer?
Perrier.
There you go, beer. Actually, there is a place with nickel tappers.
Where would you go? There must be a little place.
I don't know where I'd go, but if I find out, I'm going.
There you go. Well, see, that's what I'm saying. I mean, really, the price of crude was cheap. Now, if you think about it, in Chicago, we were paying, what, $1 a gallon back in December 98, give or take a little bit. When you think how much of that was taxes, gasoline may have been 30, 40 cents a gallon. So, I mean, it was very, very inexpensive. Now what we've seen is a cutback in production by OPEC. We're driving these big boats down the street, these trucks, and they're moving along. And the demand has been going up year after year after year. Just a few years ago, you were probably driving a small car behind an SUV just saying, hey, I want to see around this guy.
Right.
But now everybody's driving these things. And as that goes up, the demand goes up.
Now, you talked about the bad old days. And one of the responses that this country had to the bad old days was to find some old salt mines and throw a lot of oil or petroleum products into it. And it became known as, what, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve?
That is that, or SPR for short.
SPR.
And that is, I mean, is it literally a lot of oil in a hole in the ground?
It really is. It's about 570, well, I forget exactly what the number is, but it's all this oil, and it's there for our national security.
Hundreds of millions of gallons.
So, yeah.
So now they're thinking about tapping into it. What do you think about that?
Well, I definitely don't think it's the right thing to do at this time. The thing you have to remember, of course, there is a presidential election. And I know Charles Schumer is smiling somewhere right now saying, oh, there's a better than a 50-50 chance that Clinton will tap the reserve.
Charles Schumer?
Yes.
Former congressman, now senator from New York.
That's right.
Who hails from an area where most people will be taking the subway as opposed to driving cars most of the time.
Absolutely. Of course, he's one of the first persons to call for the tapping of this reserve. Every time prices go up a little bit, there's Charles Schumer. Hey, let's tap into the Strategic Petroleum Reserve.
It's only been authorized once, I understand, which was during the Gulf War.
During the Persian Gulf War back in 91. Because there was, guess what, a war going on. And that is what the Strategic Petroleum Reserve is for.
Can I ask you something?
Sure.
Does the oil in that hole in the ground stay there forever? Or because if you leave your car sitting outside with gasoline in the tank, it stays there forever. The gas supposedly goes bad or stale or whatever. Right. Do they recycle oil through? Do you know that?
Or? Well, they do. It wasn't in the ground for millions of years before that. Yeah. There were dinosaurs, so I think it does stay pretty good. I wouldn't want to taste it.
This isn't refined oil. It's raw oil products.
Raw
regular oil
products,
out of the ground.
And I do believe there is some refined product, but it's mainly the raw oil in salt caverns underneath the earth. Not a bad deal, huh? But I think the bottom line, I think, with the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, really, we have to be very, very careful. If we tap into that reserve, it could cause problems for years to come.
And it could affect the market and some of these stocks, right? If they tap into that, it may send investors on a really scare spree, and they might be afraid of what's going to happen, right?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's basically a question, should the government meddle in free markets? The reason why the reserve is there in the first place is in the case of a national emergency.
Is this an emergency?
It definitely is not an emergency.
Well, if you're trying to get elected, it might be.
It definitely might be. Absolutely correct.
Phil, we have to leave it there. Thank you so much for coming on by.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Phil Flynn, the Vice President and Senior Market Analyst at Aileron Trading. If you have questions or an issue that you'd like to put to our stable of experts, send us an email at knowledgecenter@etrade.com. That is knowledgecenter@etrade.com, and we'll take a few of your questions every week on the air, and we'll decide the good ones and the bad ones. And if we ask them, it's the good one. If it's not, you know,
if
you have to do better.
Then try again.
Absolutely, as we will do every single day. And be sure also to tell us your name and where you are writing from, or from where you are writing if you are a grammarian. We'll be back. Welcome back to E-Trade AM. Just about 30 minutes now from the market open. I'm Mike Schneider.
And I'm Stephanie Elam.
And we're going to be discussing a variety of important topics in very short order.
Definitely.
That's why we're here.
That's what we do.
Dow futures, one important topic, obviously. Down slightly this morning, off by 2. Profit taking after yesterday's tech rally may also send the NASDAQ down. NASDAQ futures currently off by about 7. And the S&P futures are down a point. But there are some people who are making some money here.
Yes, some young people, actually.
Not necessarily legitimately, at least according to the SEC. Did you see about this young Mr. Lebed?
Yep.
Yeah, his name is Jonathan Lebed. He's a 15-year-old high school student from Cedar Grove, New Jersey. If that's not middle America.
Cedar Grove. It even sounds like it, yep.
Absolutely. Mr. Lebed apparently was a very prosperous young investor. He would deal with mini caps. Mini caps are, for those of you who don't know,
these are your really small penny stocks. These are the ones that usually trade on the over-the-counter bulletin board. Really small companies, may not have heard of many of them.
And may not actually have any value at all, per
right.
se. I mean, some of these stocks don't even trade for a penny.
Right. They're like in 30 seconds.
That's why they're microcaps, they're called. But apparently he did very well with some of these stocks. Mr. Lebed would apparently trade these stocks, buy these stocks, then go into internet chat rooms, and then under fictitious names, allegedly, talk about these stocks, chat them up indeed, and then when others, I don't know, who in the world in a chat room would go and say, oh, somebody I don't know, Mr. John Smith is telling me that this is a great
stock.
I should buy this. Well, some people did. The stock prices would go up, and Mr. Lebed would make some
money. And then he would make his trades off of it.
And we're not talking milk money here. You know, we're not talking about lunch money. You know what this kid made?
How much?
Well, he made $11,000 to $74,000 per transaction.
Keep in mind, this kid started trading at 14 years old.
Right. He's only been doing this for about a year. He made over $200,000. He's going to have to repay a lot of this stuff, obviously. He's reached a deal with the SEC in which young Mr. Lebed does not admit any wrongdoing.
And now he has to get his allowance through his parents. No, I made that up.
So that's our interesting item of the day. And I assume we'll be hearing more about Mr. Lebed in very short order. Also recapping our other top stories of this hour. I kind of think that's a top story. It's a front page of the Times today.
I think so. Yes,
absolutely.
Definitely.
Many investors will be keeping a very close eye on oil prices today. We heard from Bridge News reporter Peter Rosenthal. There is some indication today that OPEC may approve another production hike to try to bring prices down. If they bring it up in terms of production, it's not because they want the prices to go down necessarily.
Right.
We want the prices to go down. But the record crude oil prices did push the U.S. July trade deficit to a record $31.9 billion. Delta Airlines, Federal Express, and the steel company USX, which used to be U.S. Steel and now it's USX, and still a steel company. I don't know about that. At any rate, they're all warning that surging oil prices could hurt their third quarter earnings. And if you would like to check up on all these stocks and all your favorite stocks, it's very simple to do. You head over to the Markets tab at etrade.com. That's the Markets tab at etrade.com.
Well, let's also check in with WebFN's Tom Hudson, because we need to get a little market flash in here to get the latest business news.
Good morning, guys. Let's take a look at that scoreboard and where we're going to start in about a half hour when Wall Street opens. The Dow will begin the day at 10,789 after falling 19 points yesterday. But a rally on the NASDAQ carried it up 139 points up to 3,866. The S&P up 15 to 1,460. That's where things will stand at the opening bell. Now, in some news, the euro plummeted to a record low against the dollar for the third day in a row yesterday. It slumped to below 85 U.S. cents during the day. It also fell to all-time lows against the yen as well. The weakening euro, guys, it's really biting deeper and deeper into earnings of U.S. companies and other foreign companies doing business in the eurozone. In fact, more and more companies are kind of coming out with earnings forecasts saying we may be below forecast coming up in the third and fourth quarter of this year. Evan Greenberg has resigned as president and chief operating officer of American International Group. We're learning about that this morning. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has registered reports of 15 more deaths now linked to faulty Firestone tires. This story continues rolling around, this bringing the number of U.S. fatalities to 103 following an investigation that began back in May. Now, in Tokyo, Bridgestone Firestone shares closed up more than 7.5% today, a bit of a rally there in Tokyo. The Clinton administration's debate on whether to tap the government's emergency oil reserve to temporarily cap soaring fuel prices is intensifying now. Dumping this government-owned oil on the market could undermine efforts, though, to enlist Saudi Arabian help to increasing the help of oil supply, some geopolitics involved. And the guy who won a court order to break up Microsoft is leaving. Listen to this. Assistant Attorney General of the U.S., Joe Klein, has decided to leave the U.S. Justice Department. He's saying goodbye.
Hmm. You know where he found his new job?
Where's that?
Through an online chat room. He's working for young Mr. Lebed.
Right.
Amazing. Listen. You don't think that this is going to be a huge political issue, the idea of whether or not to touch the strategic oil reserve? I mean, it's going to be obviously. You've got 7 weeks to go, and they can't avoid this.
No, they can't avoid the issue of energy at all, especially with oil prices staying well above that OPEC price band mechanism of $22 to $28, oil prices above $35 a barrel. Now, it's certainly an issue on the campaign trail, but is it going to be an issue at the ballot box is altogether another question.
Well, the fact is that Gore 4 years ago, and this videotape was all over the place in the evening news last night, Gore said, no, we should not tap the strategic oil reserves. It would not be a wise thing to do at this time.
That's right.
Why? That was a year ago. Mm-hmm. Why was it not wise? Well, because his boss didn't want it at that time, and he was not at that point running for president.
And the other part of this is we've heard from some of the folks we've talked to this morning, there's only about a two-month supply within the strategic petroleum reserves. So this would only get us to the week beyond Election Day if we tapped into those right now.
That's all they need.
It's like, yeah, we got it. Thank you. Let's go. But no, I don't think that from what analysts are saying, it doesn't seem like it's really going to be that good of a thing to do. So, but it will be interesting to see how it all plays out up to November.
Okay, it's that time of the morning now where things can get a little ugly around here.
Yeah.
I don't think ugly is a good word for this, though. Maybe feisty?
Feisty? Okay.
Yeah,
how about we just add in a girl snarl snap?
Ooh.
Yeah, all right.
You know, you scared me when you did that. Okay, everybody in the corner right now and ready for another face-off. It is time for Investor's Grudge Match. Every week, a pair of regular folks off the streets of America step in the E-Trade ring to match their wits, their insight, and their good fortune. Here is how our game works. A new contestant steps forward to take the challenge to dethrone the champion. Each contestant is armed only with a small basket of stocks. They tell us what they picked and why that pick is going to move.
Yep.
And they said that's what they hope. Every few days, we're going to check back with the contestants to find out who is ahead. And at the end of the week, whomever, picks up the biggest percentage gain is crowned the champion.
Champion.
Okay, so you understand the rules?
I understand. Do you understand?
I'm not sure, but I'm gonna read them back to myself.
Because
we'll see. When I read out loud, I don't hear myself all that well. Okay, in the left corner right now, use your memories and use your visualization techniques, listeners. In the left corner, the Grudge Match Challenger joining us now from San Francisco is Joelle Jones, an internet marketing specialist. And in the right corner, the crowd is going wild here. And in the right corner, our reigning champion and grudge match queen, Maryland Business School professor, Monisha Das. Welcome back, Monisha.
Welcome to you both.
Hi, good morning to all of you.
Welcome to both of you right now. And we should point out, before the mudslinging starts, let's all remember that our two contestants are just giving us their opinions, right? This is just opinions. These are not recommendations.
Right. We're just asking people on the streets of the nation, see what they think. That's all we're doing here.
So don't react to this and go out and buy the stock. Just listen.
Common sense, people.
Absolutely. Okay, let the grudge match begin. Monisha, we begin with you. What do you? First of all, tell us a little bit about yourself. You're a business school professor, so that obviously means that you're an expert.
Yeah, I teach undergraduates here in Maryland, all kinds of business subjects, mainly marketing and international business. And they're so important today. Kids, they just love this, all these new companies and, you know, the new economy, and many of them are buying things and starting websites. And
so you pull all their money, you take all their money, you have the parents send you all their money, and then you invest it for them, right?
They do the research. You steal their funds.
Yeah, they've got lots of spending plans, and, you know, we try to teach them that, you know, besides spending, you've got to think about how you're going to make money.
And Joelle, tell us a little bit about yourself. You're an internet marketing specialist. What does that mean?
I don't actually know what all that means.
It means you live in San Francisco.
Some title they gave me. But, you know, down to the basics, I work at Clear Station. I'm true Clearhead. You know, what we do is we look at stocks on a technical sense, and we figure out which ones are going to move the best.
And that makes you an expert, too, obviously.
I'm good.
No confidence problems here. Yep. All right, sounds like a good grudge match.
I have found in life that the people who are good are better than the experts, because the experts don't know how bad they are.
And I'm prettier than the experts.
Oh, see, now we can't see.
Just like Muhammad Ali. I'm like the Muhammad Ali of stock picking.
Well, Monisha might be like the George Foreman.
Remember? No, I want to be Mel Gibson.
Well, we all want to be Mel Gibson. All right, Monisha, let's begin with you. Tell us about your stock pick.
Okay, my first pick for this week is Palm Computing. Its symbol is PALM. It's trading at about 53.1116 this morning, and I'm expecting it to go to about 60 end of this week. And the real reason is its earnings are going to be out on the 27th, and we always have an earnings rally. This time it might actually break even and have positive earnings, and so the PE ratios and other numbers will start looking a lot better.
You have any Palm products?
Palm has many, many products.
Did you have any of them?
I do. In fact, not just me, some of my students use them. And we
of course they do. You're investing in it. You're telling them to go out and buy palms, aren't you?
Well...
Okay,
Manisha, we're going to get back to you in a minute. Joel, set us up with what you have right now. What are you touting?
Well, my first pick is called AvoSynct Corp. I picked this thing a little while ago.
It's AvoSynct Corp?
AvoSynct Corp.
Oh, AvoSynct Corp. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the symbol is AVCT.
Okay.
This thing has been blazing. It IPO'd over in July. And right now it's at 55 in a consolidation. I see it hitting, within the next five trading days, I see it hitting 62.
Okay, what do you mean by consolidation here?
It's spiked up. It's continually spiking up. Then the price starts to base. All the buyers and sellers figure out what's the next launch point for the next spike.
Okay.
And that's what it's doing right now around 55. That puppy's getting ready to roll.
All right, Manisha, you buy that?
Well, not exactly. In this market, you know, we've got all kinds of things like petrol mania, green spaniola, all kinds of problems. And I'm not sure that stock is going to be looked at very, positively in this market.
Yo mama. How's that? Is that over the edge?
Joel, you stay over the edge, my man. You go right over the edge and keep on going. Keep going.
This thing has shown consistency. Greenspan, nobody's paying attention to. These folks, what they do is they do connectivity for computers, and apparently they do it really well. Everybody has been buying this thing. I'm looking at it on level two quotes, and it looks like all the big block sales are going through on the buy side, so... keep an eye on it. You know, time will tell.
What about Palm? You know, Manisha loves Palm. She obviously has all her students buying Palm products right now.
Palm 7s, actually, with the modem. How much can you spend on a Palm?
Oh, man. What's wrong with that, Joel?
Man, what's right with it? I think, you know, actually, I'm going to give Manisha some credit, you know, because I talked about her mother, and, you know, Palm is based over here in the Valley. But look at this thing. Look at the chart. This thing has gotten whacked ever since it's been in the market. Opened up at 160. Now, you know, it's down at 53. She expects an earnings run, except, you know, nothing except for the stocks I'm telling you guys about.
Manisha, you go ahead and fire back freely.
Well, here are the numbers, Joel. 7.9 million people who access the Internet do so without PCs. Where do you think they go? They go to Palm.
Come on, Manisha, that's speculation. Hand is also taking Palm's fire away. I mean, come on now.
All right, we're kind of running tight here on time, and I understand you both have another pick. Go ahead.
Me?
Joel?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, Joel.
Let's go with TK. That's the symbol, and it's TK Shipping. What these folks do is they own a bunch of oil barges. Apparently, they're one of the biggest oil barge companies in the world. They just got a new contract in Australia. These folks are on fire. Every day they stay on their...
Well, let's hope the barges are not on fire, Joel.
Even if they are, these people can't lose money. They're growing at 856% a year. This thing is absolutely on fire.
Wow.
We need more oil. Because more of these people with their Palm Pilots are driving these SUVs, so we need oil. These guys are hot. They are bigger than Greenspan.
Manisha, what else do you have? What's your other pick?
Well, my other pick is an IPO that's coming out this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Omni, O-M-N-Y, is the new symbol.
O-M-N-Y?
O-M-N-Y.
Okay.
And it's a Palo Alto-based wireless company.
Oh, an IPO from Palo Alto. What a surprise.
Couldn't have guessed.
Well, it's supposed to come out at $12, but I think it could go to about 40 and then settle at about 20. I'd say I'd buy around 20 if I did not get it through my broker.
What do they do?
Well, you could buy it right now for 15
to 9, 16. OmniSky is the name of the company. They provide wireless internet and email service. And they do so in combination with a variety of big companies such as AT&T and Handspring and Palm and Ether. So they're planning to become a big player They do offer their services, and it's wonderful. Their website is very accessible, omnisky.com.
And these guys are, in your opinion, a lot better than those oil barge guys, huh?
And
you didn't say they were on fire.
Well, yeah, and you know, just imagine all these salespeople from different companies all over, you know, all over the market, and you know, they can use Palm and with an OmniSky wireless service.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a growing market. It's going to give so much more connectivity and accessibility, and that's what people want. They want to be able to talk to each other, stay in touch with each other.
Use it to be able to cheat in your class, probably, too. They could probably be in the back of the class sending each other notes.
Make new rules about that as they come along.
Well, the rule is here is when we're out of time, we're out of time. And right now, we're out of time. So, Joelle and Monisha, thank you so much. We're going to have you back.
See who wins.
I wasn't finished laughing at Omni.
Oh.
Right now, close to its
you know
low
something?
Of the
day. We could be doing this by Palm.
I think Joelle took the girl snarl snap all the way to the end.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He is definitely holding a grudge, and that's why we called a grudge match. Thanks to both of you. Have you back next time around to check in and see who can laugh at whom longer. Okay, thanks to Joelle and Monisha, and I have a feeling this conversation is going to continue for a considerable amount of time.
It totally could.
Remember, they're just giving opinions. These are not recommendations. Don't go out and do this on account of what Joelle, Monisha, or anybody else here said. This is a good time for you to exercise your brain waves and your own personal discretion. Got to take a break, and we have some interesting stuff when we come back. We have the market flash. We have the numbers for you.
Right. We're going to look at futures again, see what we're doing going into the opening.
Right. And Chris Grinak will be here with our buy, sell, and hold. Back in a couple of moments. Stay with us. And we're back right now. The clock is ticking down towards the market open, just 15 minutes away. What do you think?
We're keeping an eye on those futures. They're still down, though.
That's right. Soft. We hear the operating soft word of the day is soft. Okay, and
down
high.
Soft,
soft
yes.
And high, absolutely.
High oil.
How is the high price of oil affecting the companies in the oil industry? Well, we thought we would focus in on these today, these companies, in today's Sector Watch. This is your chance to look at this particular sector of the markets and to focus in with the help of an expert. Fidel Gate is joining us right now. He's the senior energy analyst with Fondstock & Company, and he joins us from his office in New York. Fidel, good to have you with us this morning.
Good morning.
Welcome.
What is what's happening first of all with these energy related stocks, the oil company stocks? One would assume prices are going up. Oil stocks would be going up. Is that a given here?
Well, it's not really a blanket statement, although we have obviously very strong oil prices as well as strong natural gas prices. Rising tides did not lift all ships in the energy sector.
Which ships have been listed, Fidel? Can you run down a few of them?
The ships that have been listed, obviously the oil service stocks, they have done very well, but also the exploration and production companies or the independent, they have done spectacularly. They are up 80% on average.
80?
Since January. Huh. 80%.
Give us some actual names on these so we can know
well,
what we're talking about.
Well, you have Anadarko, one of the largest oil companies among this category, and they are up 82%.
Which company was that?
Anadarko.
Okay.
Anadarko.
The stock symbol is APC. Mm-hmm. You have Apache, APA, the stock symbol, is up 61%. You also have company like Ocean Energy, stock symbol OEI, up almost 100%. But also, we have to take into account that these stocks have suffered tremendously 2 years ago when oil prices were down as low as $10 per barrel. So they rebounded from a very low level, and we are seeing them, some of these stocks now hit all-time high, and I expect this trend to continue.
What about, and a lot of Americans, I'm sure, when we drive down the road and we see the signs, Exxon, BP, Hess, all these other companies, we wonder how their stocks are faring. Why don't you give us a rundown?
I'm very glad you asked this question because...
Well, that's what I'm here for, Fidel.
These stocks, the major integrated oil company stocks, the stocks that of the companies that people see and know because they buy gasoline from their service station, they have done relatively poorly to the independent stocks.
Really? Well, what does, Fidel, if I can interrupt for a second, what does relatively poorly mean?
ExxonMobil up 7% for the year.
No, that's not that great.
Anadarko up 80% for the year.
Yeah.
So obviously, relative to Anadarko, they have done very little. But relative to the market, the S&P 500, which is down almost 2% for the year, obviously, you know, portfolio managers think that Exxon did fairly okay. But BP Amoco, for example, is down 10% for the year.
Down.
So that's obviously, there are three large cap oil stock down for the year. One of them is BP Amoco, and the other one is Texaco, down 5% for the year. So it really has not been all rosy for the large cap.
Why do you think that is?
Very simple reason for that is that most investors, when they saw the tremendous rise in crude oil prices early this year, they made the bet on the companies that are much more leveraged to oil prices as far as earnings, and these are the independent oil companies. These are the exploration companies, Anadarko, Apache, Ocean.
The ones that can take your oil wherever they want to go, they can take it. Those are the ones that are doing better.
So their performance really reflects the direction of crude price. On the other hand, the Exxon, Mobil, the Texaco, and the BP, because they have very large refining and marketing operation, which is negatively impacted by the sharply rising crude oil prices, most investors stayed away from this group, and investors were right.
Fidel, what about, obviously, you've seen the headlines and heard all the stories. There's an awful lot of political intrigue about how this issue will play itself out right now. We're only 7 weeks away from the presidential election. What will happen to these stocks, say, if the strategic reserve is tapped?
The strategic reserve, or the SPR, we have about 580 million barrels per day. It is important for us to explain to the public, you know, this in context, that it is only about 2 months' worth of consumption for the U.S. So it's not really as big as many people let to be.
Right, but psychologically, sometimes investors will react to it.
Psychology is definitely very important, especially in this market, especially when it comes to oil. There's no question in my mind that if we decide to tap in the strategic petroleum reserve, 1 or 2 million barrels per day, that will definitely calm the world market significantly, and it could have an impact of probably $3, $4, $5 even per barrel, depending on how much volume we are going to allow to come out. So it definitely will calm the market. It will bring crude oil prices down. But again, it's a short-term solution. It's band-aid. It doesn't really solve this country problem, which is basically we have no energy policy, and politicians from either side, they do not want to face this question. Nobody is debating it. Nobody is talking about it. People are complaining about it, but nobody is doing anything about it.
But basically, it seems that most people who cover these industries are for the reserve not being touched. It seems that everyone's happy with it just leaving it alone. And since it's not that much, if you look at it from a national standpoint.
Exactly. It is meant to be for national security issues, for crisis situation. If Iraq, for example, stops shipping oil, then we have a world energy crisis. Then we might have a reason, strong enough, compelling reason to say, okay, that's an emergency. This is a national security issue. We have to tap into the petroleum reserve. But right now, what we're doing, we're really interfering with the market. Let the market dictate where prices be, and let companies, if companies see the profit motive behind it, let them drill for more oil, let them produce more oil. We are producing as much as we can, and we're drilling as fast as we can. So therefore, by introducing a factor into the marketplace, it only will impact prices in the very near term. But long term, it's not going to really change anything.
Fidel, we're going to have to leave it there for now, but I get a very strong sense, it might be ESP, that we're going to need to talk to you some more over the next couple of weeks, because I think this issue is not going to get anything except a little larger in the public's imagination between now and, say, Election Day.
Yeah, we could see much higher prices in the meantime.
All right. Well, you've now set yourself up for a return appearance. Fidel Gate, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. We're going to take a closer look now at the energy sector. This is not a subject we can let go of, nor do we intend to at this point.
No.
You see, you heard the last things he said. we could see prices go a lot higher.
Higher, yes. So SUVs. Who's selling them? I'm going to continue to say that.
You know, these people that take the ferry to work.
Should be like me. Give a little ticket. It's $2. You're in Manhattan.
Absolutely. Okay, let's take a closer look now at the energy sector in buy, sell, or hold. It's a fun segment, and we use the word fun advisedly. We do it every morning with the founder of ClearStation.com's Chris Skrinak. Chris is plugged into ClearStation's 300,000 or so members and a Wall Street veteran himself. Every day we'll take your stock picks, and by the way, we're going to put them to Chris for his thoughts on whether to buy, sell, or hold them. Good morning, Chris. I'm doing fine. Listen, this is probably going to be a very difficult sector to make a determination on, but let's just go to it.
One of the ways to look at the oil market is to start with the supply chain, starting with exploration, obviously, because that's where it comes from. Now, many of these stocks have done dramatically well this year. My current favorite remains Triton Oil. Triton Oil trades on the New York Exchange, the symbols OIL. Closed yesterday at 46 and 81 cents. Now, this stock not only has strong fundamental strength in that they have just discovered a billion barrels. They have some tax credits off of from some properties they have in Trinidad, but it also shows extraordinary technical strength with a MACD green indicator at ClearStation.com.
Let's talk a little bit. We mentioned this with Fidel as well, because the public, by and large, I assume, relates to oil and the oil industry through gas stations. Stocks like, say, Exxon, for instance, these places where people should be...
Exxon Mobil, so
right.
They reach everywhere in the country now.
Yeah, should you be sitting on this one? Or what is your sense of what's the proposed best course here?
The energy market's played out. All the big plays are pretty much done. It started moving, you know, a couple months ago, obviously, but there's not an awful lot of upside there now. It's in fact, reached speculative plays. So only speculators are going to be getting into oil right now. As the previous caller said, the top names, the names that you see when you're driving down the street, are the top of the supply chain. They're really on the other side of the Triton oils. And ExxonMobil, taking a look at them right now, they are showing a little bit of strength, closing at $86 yesterday. But, you know, they're doing a characteristic that many of the losing tech stocks have shown right now. That is, a week ago, they gapped up into that $80 range, and now they're sliding down to fill that gap. So they're not showing an awful lot of promise, really, for getting in at this point. In fact, what most savvy traders right now are taking their profits in this area and really moving on to the stronger stocks, which are, believe it or not, back in the good old tech sector.
Well, speaking of that, we just got an email from Joe, who's interested to hear your knowledge about...
Well, Cisco is not one of the stocks that's showing strength recently. A lot of people believe right now that Cisco, while it's not an outright sell, is showing some very strong weakness. Of course, they've just reached the $450 billion market cap level, which puts it as the second largest company in the United States after GE. And one of the interesting things about this is GE has a very diversified product line. Cisco sells networking routers. So a lot of people are not very comfortable with that, so uncomfortable that they've actually taken the stock into the $50 range for the first time since the tech wreck back in May. Now, Cisco closed yesterday at $61, and of course it's a very popular stock. Nobody would say that this is a stock that you'd start shorting, for example. However, it's not a very strong stock at these levels, and people are looking to some of their key competitors, including Juniper. Juniper, unlike Cisco, is just a fraction of Cisco's size. But Juniper is one of the strongest competitors, and they're actually stealing an enormous amount of their market share in the optical networking routing market. So Juniper's stock symbol, JNPR, is a very exciting stock at these levels. It closed at 215 yesterday, and a lot of people just don't see an end in sight for that stock.
I have another email in from Elwood, who wants to know about communication stocks, specifically cable TV and wireless telephones.
Well, interestingly enough, one of the best places to begin is the 500-pound gorilla in wireless, which is Qualcomm. Now, Qualcomm has had a rough ride this year. It started the year with analyst recommendations saying it was going to go up to $250 a share. That's a pretty tough reputation to live up to, and in fact, the stock slid down and has been trading in the $60 to $70 range for most of the year. Well, Qualcomm just broke out this year. It closed at $75 yesterday, and people believe that this stock is ready to take its next run. Now, some of the other wireless players, wireless has been somewhat disappointing for most of the year, and part of that is because of the unrealistic expectations that we had going into the year.
It was so hot for so long.
Right. Some of the other players to look at, though, are the software players in that group, including Comverse Technology. Stock symbol is CMVT. But my personal favorite is Conexit Systems. Stock symbol there is CNXT. Now, Conexit has created a technical formation called an island reversal. That's when a stock gaps down and then gaps back up. It's almost like somebody took the graph out of the newspaper, cut it, moved it down an inch, you know, just like that. Now, what that means to investors is that there has been a dramatic shift in sentiment about the stock. Conexit closed yesterday at $47, and it's just about on everybody's buy list today. Now, the rest of the wireless plays are starting to pull into place now, but it is a little bit early in this particular uptrend. If I had to pick one other favorite in that group, it would be Phone.com, stock symbol PHCM.
Well, we have one more email here, and it's from Mitch in Rhode Island. He wants to know the long and short view on Genentech, biotech company.
Yeah, DNA is the stock symbol on Genentech. Biotech, once again, is an incredibly exciting sector. Genentech is one of the largest biotech players, and for that reason, you would put it more or less in the growth category, not the hyper-growth category. Of course, it has a fairly long history of successful implementations of drugs. It closed yesterday at 167. The biotechs as late have been basing. What that means is that they have taken a good run up. Most biotechs for the year are up 20 to even 150%. So they're taking a little break from that strong run up, and that's exactly what Genentech is doing at these levels. It's consolidating right now between 155 and 165. It's actually at the top end of that range right now, so it's just at that breakout point. I think DNA is one of the best picks in the biotech group. So I would definitely put a buy on that, but it is not a hyper-growth stock. You're not going to get the returns from that you will get from human genome or some of the more experimental and specifically genetics-focused biotech stocks like Celera.
Chris, we're going to leave it there for now. A pleasure as always. Chris Greenack will be back with us again tomorrow morning to tell you to buy, sell, or hold. I might not tell you so much, but kind of like encourage you maybe.
Tell you what he's thinking.
Absolutely.
How about that? That's probably the best way to go. Let's check our futures now. We're going into the market open. Right now, Dow futures are down by 3. NASDAQ futures are off by 6, it seems. And S&P futures are now down 2. So we're still pointing to a drop at that opening bell.
Mm-hmm.
But it's time for another market flash. Let's check in at the news desk with WebFN's Tom Hudson.
Still getting close to that opening bell, guys. Let's see where we start this morning. The NASDAQ begins the day at 38.66. This after yesterday's big percentage point gain, the best percentage gain since June for the NASDAQ, a big tech rally. The Dow starting the day at 10,789. In news, ADC is buying the privately held broadband access systems. This deal totals $2.25 billion. In stock. ADC expects the merger to cut into fourth quarter earnings by at least 2 cents a share. And we have the world's biggest mobile telecommunications company. It's a company called Vodafone, based out of Great Britain. It's buying a bigger stake in Spain's second biggest mobile phone operator. There are still a number of conditions before this deal closes, though, that they have to kind of dot the I's and cross the T's on. Federal regulators here in the States are seeking new information from some regional telephone companies on a proposed merger of America Online and Time Warner. The regulators want to ensure that AOL will not promote its cable service exclusively after the company merges with Time Warner. A federal judge has dismissed PepsiCo's antitrust lawsuit accusing Coke of monopolizing the market for fountain-dispensed soft drinks in the U.S. This judge ruling that Pepsi's definition of the market was actually no more than just a distribution channel, so he tossed it out. Some quick numbers here. The U.S. July trade deficit widened to a record $31.9 billion, and Chase Manhattan's CEO says 3,200 jobs will be lost when it integrates with J.P. Morgan.
I'm going to find out how strong the economy really is, whether those people can be absorbed into jobs that quickly.
Yeah, that's right. It's already obviously a very very tight job market in the U.S.
Yeah, well, you know, we keep hearing about, we don't want it to be too tight because inflation, because
that's
prices
right.
get driven up,
mm-hmm.
but you don't want to see people out of work either.
Not
it's
working,
a tough
yeah.
one. Well, you know, we're only about and away from the bell, so we got to go goodbye.
It's time to go.
Okay.
See how we do today.
Okay, that's going to do it for us in this edition of E-Trade AM. I'm Mike Schneider.
And I'm Stephanie Elam. Join us again tomorrow, an hour before the market opens, for E-Trade AM, your source for smart investing. Thanks for listening.
E-Trade's media content vendors obtain information from sources deemed to be reliable. However, E-Trade's media content vendors do not guarantee the accuracy of any of the information or commentary provided. This audio program does not make specific trading recommendations or provide individualized market advice. The information contained in this broadcast is provided as an information service only. In no event shall E-Trade's media content vendors or E-Trade be liable for direct, indirect, or incidental damages resulting from the use of this information.